When we last spoke, you were just starting the second half of season four. And now this part of the season has seen you sort of take a different approach to the music, to Galactica. First of all, why the move towards more atonal music for the episode, Sometimes a Great Notion?
That's an interesting question because I really did think on it. One of the things that's happened is I've come to the end of Galactica, as I've tried to figure out what I haven't done yet. What instruments have I not used? What style of composition have I not used? And when I was getting toward the end here, that list of possibilities got shorter and shorter. In the case of the episode you're talking about, which is the mid-season premiere, Sometimes a Great Notion, the ending of the episode beforehand ended with this cue that I wrote that I called Diaspora Oratorio that was for choir, full orchestra, and ethnic soloist taiko drums. It was the biggest, most glorious piece of music that I might have ever written in my life. And the scene was very joyous, even though we get the rug pulled out from under us at the end. We do get the rug pulled out from under us at the end. And when the mid-season episode premiered, it was so dark and so depressing. And depressing is not the right word. It's not depressing to watch, but our characters are in such a dark and depressed place that I wanted the music to amplify that emotion. Now, the problem is that I wanted it to be so cold, so isolated and desolate and bleak, that any music that I wrote that was melodic was still too happy. I mean, really, when I was going back and listening to all the cues I'd written in Battlestar, I'd written some very dark and very sad pieces, but still, somehow, they were still too emotional. Like, you still felt comforted listening to these pieces, and I wanted this episode to just be as bleak as possible. So I thought about what else can I do? I can't make a melody any sadder than some of the ones that I've written. What if I have no melody at all? And I can't make a chord progression any sadder than I've already done. So what if I have no discernible chord progression whatsoever? Although that's not true, it's just harder to hear. And so that was my approach, was to rethink the palette of chords that I have and come up with something that really was dark. And I mean dark even compared to Battlestar Galactica score, which is usually pretty damn dark.
Okay, so now you, but there was a sort of bright spot in that episode, and that was the themes that you used for Duala.
Well, I was just going to say that that's all of that was sort of a big misdirect, because Duala is being set up in that episode as the shining beacon, you know, like the one person that we're really following, and especially because we haven't seen that much of her in season three, since season two, in season three and four. And she seems to be taking it better than everybody else, although when you look at the clues, you realize that she's obviously taking it worse than everybody else. So I wanted to create this music that would help underline that idea, but I also didn't want to push it too far. I mean, if the music was too sappy and too pretty, you'd immediately think, ah, something's wrong. Something's amiss here. But that really did allow me in the second half of the episode to take it even darker. And that's one of the things I loved about that episode in particular, is that it starts off being the bleakest music, the most grim music I have ever written for the show. And then halfway through, it gets even worse and gets even darker. And it's just following the tone of the episode. I mean, that's exactly the contour of the episode, and it gets worse and worse for our characters. I mean, really, that I think in my blog I called that episode an assault on the psyche. And I think it is. I mean, really, it's difficult to watch. It's really hard for me to watch it, but it's done so masterfully. The writing by David and Bradley and David Weddle and Bradley Thompson, and the directing by Michael Nankin. It was a very magical episode for me to work on.
Now, you actually brought in the actress who plays Duala to provide a little bit of vocal help with that. So how did that come about?
Well, that came about because the director had fallen in love with her singing this or humming this little tune on the set. It was something that she had improvised. And he had actually called me from the set and alerted me to this, and because of the writer's strike, this is 8 months or something before I actually write this score. But I had the time to think about it and think about what I would do with it. And I didn't get the idea at first. I just thought, okay, well, I'll listen to this tune that she hums and I'll come up with a theme based on it or something. And then I was backstage at one of my concerts, one of the big rock concerts, the Battlestar Galactica concerts that we did last spring. Mm-hmm. And Candace was one of our hosts. She was there hosting the second night. And I was backstage with her, and we were talking about the episode or something. And I just remember the idea just came to me immediately. And I asked her right then, I was like, oh, my God, you should come in and sing on the score. You should hum that tune on the score. And she was really excited about the idea, even though she confessed that she wasn't really comfortable as a vocalist. But I assured her that the idea that I had was to create something very spooky and ambient and ethereal. So I didn't want it to sound like a professional singer in the score. I wanted it to sound like Dualla is in the score. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. It's actually one of the most interesting things I might have ever done on the show, because there have been other situations where cast members are interacting with music. I think the two other obvious ones are Gaeta singing the song that he sang in episode 409, and then obviously in Someone to Watch Over Me, Kara plays piano. But this was different. I mean, this was a character not on screen. This was a character that appeared in the score. It's like she crossed over that wall, and now she's part of the score, you know, like this ethereal presence. It was a really cool idea, and it worked out great. It worked out better than I had ever hoped.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of the episode Someone to Watch Over Me, which is the episode where you refer to Kara as sort of bringing in the theme, you actually had the additional element of a piano. And the fact that the piano eventually becomes sort of this uniting factor in the episode. So where does the piano come from? And what did you have to do to prepare your music for that particular episode?
Oh, boy. Well, I don't mean to cop out, but I'd highly recommend anyone listening who wants to know to check out my blog, because I wrote the like longest entry I've ever written in my life. It was like a college dissertation on what happened to make that episode a reality. But to give you the shortened version for people that don't want to go to my blog, that I got a phone call from David Weddle and Bradley Thompson when they were writing their script, and they told me what they wanted to do, that they had an idea of Kara meeting a piano player who offers her advice and eventually is revealed to be more important than just a piano player. And I started writing stuff basically from the get-go, and I was on set with, again, Michael Mankin again. I was on set the entire time, writing music, usually every night, writing music for essentially the following day's production, and helping and simultaneously probably annoying the actors, making sure that they play it properly. But it's something that we felt really, all of us felt really passionate about, that we wanted the actors playing the music during the takes. I can't tell you how many times I've seen film or television and you've got an actor sitting in front of a piano and you can't see his hands and he's playing intensely difficult music and he or she is also able to carry on a discussion or drink from a glass of water or do whatever else they're doing that just doesn't make you believe that that person is a musician actually playing. And I'm very proud of the results we got on the show. I mean, Katie Sackhoff and Rourke Cricklow, the actor who played the piano player, really were playing this stuff. I mean, they weren't playing it precisely 100% perfectly, but they were playing it enough that Michael could shoot their hands and shoot their faces and shoot from any angle he wanted. And then when the whole show was done, I went back and manually replaced every piano piece, lining up their fingers, lining up every note, which with this process, it was incredibly painstaking. But to look at it, to put it in this way, if you think about most of the time you see music on screen, you're seeing a person essentially lip sync. You're seeing music that was recorded first, mm-hmm. and then in production, they pretend to play the music that's already been recorded.
Right.
We did the exact opposite. And what we did is we had them play first on set, play for real. And then after that was done, I recorded the music and made it fit what they did and what the edit required and what the show required. So even though it was incredibly painstaking, the result is that the music is integrated into the cut and into the story so well, I don't think it could have been done the other way around.
Now, you also made a little nod to the original series as well during that episode.
Yes.
It's called Exploration, I believe it is?
Mm-hmm. It's called Exploration by Stu Phillips from the original classic series.
Okay. So where did that come from, or was that just kind of an inspired choice?
Well, it came from multiple places. It was an inspired choice. I mean, part of it was a practical issue. In the story, the piano player is a composer who's struggling to come up with ideas. Mm-hmm. While he's struggling, he plays a piece of music that Kara recognizes. And this piece of music is supposed to be so famous that it's recognizable. For example, if you saw somebody sitting at a piano and they went, dun, 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 and, you know, almost anybody would go, hey, man, I know what that is. You didn't write that. So I thought, well, this is the one piece of music that's supposed to sound like somebody else wrote it. And since essentially on a musical level, I was the piano player, I wrote all of the music that he was supposed to write, I thought, well, maybe we should get music from somebody that's not me. Maybe bring home that point that it's a different composer. And then I thought, well, who's the composer to write music for this universe? And I thought, oh, well, of course. We should bring back Stu Phillips. And the reason we should bring back Stu Phillips is that he's already written music that everyone in the show knows. Mm-hmm. He's written the famous, the theme from Battlestar Galactica, but what we call the Colonial Anthem, which is like the national anthem of the colonies.
Right.
So to me, in my mind, it means that the guy that wrote that is such a famous composer that he probably has written symphonies and other things that Kara and other musicians in the fleet would recognize. Mm-hmm. So it makes perfect sense that he would be the guy that wrote this little piece of music that the piano player is riffing on.
Now, you just got back from Germany.
Yes.
And so it was the premiere of a ballet. This blew my mind. Ballet based on the music of Galactica called Prelude to War. What can you tell me about this?
This was an extraordinary opportunity for me to work with a choreographer, a guy named Ricardo Fernando. He's Brazilian, but he's based in Germany in a town called Hagen. And Hagen has an outstanding arts program. It's actually a relatively new city, but the arts program there is outstanding. And the ballet company is world class. And the orchestra is outstanding, and they put on this production of a piece that I called Prelude to War. And this is a piece that I wrote by combining soundtrack album pieces and other cues that I've written for Battlestar Galactica from all four seasons. In fact, most of the ballet, at least over half of it, is from season four. Some of it is recently as Sometimes a Great Notion. I don't know, what else can I say about it? It's just extraordinary. It's not narrative in any way. You're not seeing the story of Galactica. You're not seeing spaceships and Viper jocks and stuff like that. It's just a modern visual accompaniment to the music. And Ricardo just did excellent work, and he wrote and he choreographed these visuals that were just stunning. I mean, some of the things just blew my mind. He has people upside down scaling walls, and he's got people, one dance was, one of the movements was set with two dancers inside what is essentially a giant aquarium. They were in about 6 or 8 inches of water.
Wow.
And they're just, it's almost like a water ballet on a dry stage. I mean, it was really mind-blowing. I got to go to the premiere and was there for the first week of rehearsals. Battlestar fans from all over Europe showed up. It was a great chance for me to interact with a lot of these fans that I just wouldn't otherwise get a chance to meet, you know? It was really exciting. I mean, I'd love to do more work like that in the future.
So now, when this interview airs, the final episode will have come and gone and will probably still be sinking into the minds of fans a mere 2 hours after the... So in all of this, in the 4 years, 5 years that you've worked on Battlestar Galactica, do you have a favorite moment experience with working on the show?
Well, my first answer is probably no. I don't think I could pick one favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Certain experiences, like I mentioned, being able to go up on set, be involved with the production of an episode, someone to watch over me. I mean, that one would probably be it, though. I mean, that was such an unusual experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that episode was so intensely musical. But that whole experience, I will definitely, not only will I never forget it, I don't think I'll ever have an experience like that again. Most of my Battlestar experiences are like that. I'll never work on a show like Battlestar again, but that was a pretty extraordinary experience for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, you actually made a sort of a brief appearance in one of the episodes?
Yeah, you could say that. Very brief.
Oh, I was just going to say, you on your blog, there's actually a picture, and you're sort of off in the background as sort of a blurry image. But how was it to be an actor for however long you were on the set?
Oh, God, it was awful. It was funny because I thought, even as an extra, it wasn't an awful experience. It was a lot of fun. But suddenly when the cameras are rolling, and I realized, like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, all I had to do is sit at a table and talk with two attractive young women. But as soon as the camera rolling, I'm like, oh, what's my motivation? What am I off duty? What am I, a crew member? And then the other thing that made it even more difficult, actually, this is what probably made it the most difficult, was because we're extras, we're not supposed to actually make any sound. So we weren't even able to improvise a conversation. We would just move our mouths and move our drinks and pretend to be talking. And this really kind of blew my mind, you know, because it's hard to do that if you've never done it before, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was especially funny because everyone else, all the other extras, oh, they have been doing this for a while. They know exactly the routine. But for me, it was exciting and also kind of scary, and it was pretty thrilling. But honestly, it just made me realize, like, wow, this is something that is so different than what I'm used to doing. As I mentioned in my blog, even in the movie that we shot for my concert that ended up on the Battlestar Season 4.0 disc set, even that, you can tell it's like I'm pretending to be myself and I still suck. Like, it's funny. You know, just that kind of on-camera acting performance is clearly just not my strong suit, to say the least. But it was fun. It was very fun. And I was just also very excited that somewhere in the series I got to be on camera. That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Now, you in your blog, is again, we seem to go back to the blog a lot, but you wrote The Final Cue about a week or so back. Actually, it was before your 30th birthday. I believe that was the goal for you.
Yep, it was the last cue I wrote was on Valentine's Day, actually.
So what did you do when it was all over?
When it's all over, it'll never be all over. When I wrote my last cue, to be honest with you, I didn't know what to do. I remember having this very visceral reaction when I realized that the cue was done. And the last cue I wrote is the last cue you're going to hear. And I remember standing up from my desk, and I had these, like, chills kind of going all over my body and, like, the back of my neck. And I kind of went over the window and looked outside, and the sun was setting. And I remember standing there just thinking, I'm done. And I stood there for, like, 5 minutes, and I didn't know if I should just celebrate or collapse or cry or drink or what. I mean, it was never felt like that before. And, of course, I wasn't done. I mean, we had to go through orchestration and recording and mixing and the final dub, and then even when it's finished, there's talking about it and blogging about it and doing interviews, and then there's doing the plan, and then there's doing concerts, and then there's doing Caprica. And really, I just think that Battlestar is going to be a part of my life for the rest of my life. I just don't think it's ever going to be something that goes away, and I think I'm very proud of that, you know. But the reality is, though, that at that moment, the work that I had done, the music that I wrote that would define my contribution to Battlestar was finished. Mm-hmm. And all the other stuff is writing about it and talking about it and thinking about it. You know, and Caprica is evolving from it. But it, the actual music, was done. And that was a pretty crazy feeling.
Mm-hmm. Now, the series itself is, this has happened before and will happen again. If you could go back to 2004 and advise your 2004 self about what was to come, what do you think you'd say?
That's a really tough question. Very tough. I am notoriously harsh on myself as a critic. I don't really like even listening to a lot of the stuff I wrote in season one and season two, even though when I do listen to it, there's a lot of great stuff, but I mean, my work has evolved so much. But to go back and you know, to travel back through time and tell myself or warn myself things would mean that I wouldn't get to where I am now necessarily. Right. So I do have a lot of respect for the process of growing and changing and evolving. I think, honestly, the thing that I would tell myself, I don't think I'd tell myself anything, Rob. I hate to cop out on the answer. What I was going to say is I might have told myself, hey, like, don't worry, you're going to get through this, and it's going to be good, and you're going to be on it for a few years, and people are going to, you know, you're going to write music that eventually you're really proud of. But at the same time, if I had known that, then I might not have been so petrified, you know, when I was doing season one. So, you know, I think that fear is probably a very good thing. So, I'm very proud of what I did, and I don't think I'd go back and monkey with it.
Okay. So you mentioned this very briefly, but what is your involvement in the plan?
I assume I'm scoring it. I haven't gotten a phone call yet, okay, but I'm scoring it, I'm pretty damn sure. So I'm starting that, I think, in a couple weeks. I'm hoping it turns into a couple months because I need a break. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to the plan, but I must admit that on a musical level, and probably on every level, the plan is going back. You know, it's going back and filling in some gaps. I do not think that as a experience for me or as an experience for the audience, it will necessarily be, I can say safely, it will definitely not be grander or more operatic or lyrical or epic as the finale. I mean, really, the finale is the finale. Mm-hmm. And I think of the plan is going to be a very cool little epilogue where you're going to go back and learn some other things. So in many ways, I wish I'd already done the plan, because the work that I did on the finale is so big. I the idea of now going back and doing another 2 hours of Battlestar is kind of strange.
Mm-hmm. And now you haven't quite left the Battlestar universe either, as you were scoring Caprica. So what can you tell me about the music that you've done so far for the show Caprica?
Well, Caprica, I've scored the first 2 hours. I've scored everything they've shot, pilot. And that comes out on DVD in April. And so everyone will get to hear it. But Caprica is a very interesting score. And I'd love to talk in more detail because I can't really spoil anything. But I can say that it takes place in a world that is at its peak. Technology is advanced, its society is advanced, and it's obviously before this incredible apocalypse. So the music is very different. It's a very different feel. It doesn't feel at all raw or tribal or urgent in the way that Battlestar does. It's a much more refined and kind of polished sound. Really, going back to my philosophy on doing sometimes a great notion, when I got Caprica, I remember thinking, okay, well, I want to do this different than Battlestar. Well, what is the most different than Battlestar? And I realized that in order to make Caprica different, the trick was to make it more normal. So, in fact, the orchestral writing on Caprica is far more traditional than anything on Battlestar. It's still very signature of me. Like, it still sounds like me, and there's definitely some nods to Battlestar. But I think that people are going to be interested by the score, at least I hope they are, because it starts out in a very different place. And I think that my goal is going to be, if we are fortunate enough to carry on multiple seasons with this show, and of course even Ron doesn't know where it would end yet, but as we go forward in time in Caprica, we are getting closer and closer to the miniseries, right? Mm-hmm, right. So it makes sense that the music starts out very different, and then as we go on season by season, it might start to become more like Battlestar in terms of the music. Which I think is an interesting idea, but, you know, we'll see, it's way too early to be thinking that far ahead.
So speaking of the music that we sort of can talk about, when can we expect to see the next volume of the BSG music?
The record label would love for me to tell you that it will be in July, but I am making no promises.
Okay.
There's a lot of work to be done this time around, and it might be a little later. It'll be this year, for sure.
For sure.
But hopefully it'll be in the summer.
Okay. Now you did something very interesting on your blog that I've never seen any other composer do. You've said, "What do you want to hear?"
Yeah.
That's a fantastic approach, and I've never seen it before. And it was just something that I had to say, "Wow, that's pretty cool."
Well, you know, the interesting thing is if you think about film soundtracks, most of the time, a film soundtrack is pretty much every cue. Mm-hmm. It's really in television we have this issue where you're only getting just the tip of the iceberg. And frankly, I think this is one of the things that makes my Battlestar Galactica albums so good, is that there's literally no filler. I mean, it's like, it's the best cue from every episode, basically. Mm-hmm. Actually, the film soundtracks that I've put out in terms of albums are never quite as solid as those Galactica records. There are a lot of great scenes, and so I thought it'd just be interesting to see what fans want. If anything, it was sort of a test for myself, because I was just curious. I mean, I certainly know the cues that I want for sure to be on there. Mm-hmm. And if you go to my blog, you can see, I mean, you know, hundreds of people have chimed in. There's some obvious standouts. I mean, there's certain cues. It's like the big choral piece I was telling you about. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, of course, that's going to be on there. The interesting thing for me was seeing the other cues, some of the cues, honestly, I just had sort of forgotten about. Not forgotten about, but I had written off as not being necessarily great album cues. And just seeing that, you know, some of these cues are ones that caught people's ears. And so it was just fascinating for me to be able to get that kind of interaction with the fans and find out what it is that they hear in the show and want to hear on the record. I mean, ultimately, I'm going to make the record that I believe represents the series the best and represents the best work that I've done. But it's just been fascinating to talk to the fans about that.
So you bring up the fans a lot. And mm-hmm. While this is not the end and it's not completely over for you, any final words for the fans of your music for Battlestar Galactica?
The fans of my music for Battlestar, I would say, I don't know. I mean, I guess I would just thank them for being such good listeners. I mean, people on my blog catch things in the score that I never thought anyone would catch, and that has actually affected the way I write. I mean, really, the score to season 4 is different than the score to season 1, 2, and 3, because I am now, I'm planting little Easter eggs for people. I'm almost testing the fans. And a great example of this, I literally tested the fans last week when I put up a pop quiz mm-hmm. for an episode where I didn't tell them what I did. I asked them, what theme did I use here? Who's the soloist that played this theme here? And people know. And not only did people know, but people were commenting on tiny little four-note motives that I put in there that I didn't even bother mentioning because I thought, oh, nobody will catch that. But they do. And it really has made the score more complex because it's been rewarding for me to know that the more detail I put into the music, the people get it and they appreciate it. So I think it's been a cool example of fans actually having an impact on the show that they love, you know? It's been great.
Well, I really want to say thanks for 4 seasons of Battlestar Galactica. Definitely Caprica and What's to Come. I'm really looking forward to it.
It's been my pleasure. And also, you know, you and your show have been a big supporter of mine since day one. In season 1, and so it's been fun doing at least one of these interviews every season.